Welcome to the world today. My name is Frank Weltner. I am the librarian for JewWatch, the largest compendium of information about Jewish organizations and news on the internet today. In addition, I am the librarian and archivist for a new website, www.americanussr.com, which is already the largest compendium of history concerning the negative aspects of the United States of America, which the CIA, FBI, the presidency, the Congress, and all other agencies of the United States want you to know nothing about. Today is December the 23rd, 2010. It's a day in which people are preparing for their Christmas festivities. New Year's Eve will be tomorrow. In St. Louis, Missouri, where I live, it will be a white Christmas, evidently, as 2 to 4 inches of snow is on its way here and should begin somewhere in the afternoon tomorrow and go all the way through Christmas Day. I'm sure the kiddies will be very excited about this. And some older adults will probably become kind of teary-eyed over past Christmases when Bing Crosby was singing White Christmas. Well, I'm not particularly dreaming of White Christmas, but it'll be interesting to see it. It's something that doesn't happen all the time here, but it happens maybe once every 10 or 15 years, so it will be sort of interesting, and I can assure you that I'll enjoy it. In the news today, news is broken that an airline pilot is being disciplined by the Transportation Security Administration, TSA, for posting a video on YouTube pointing out that he believes serious flaws exist in airport security. The 50-year-old pilot who lives outside Sacramento asked that neither he nor his airline be identified. He has worked for the airline for more than a decade and was deputized by the TSA to carry a gun in the cockpit. He is also a helicopter test pilot in the Army Reserve and flew missions for the United States in Macedonia. 3 days after he posted a series of 6 video clips recorded with a cell phone camera at San Francisco International Airport, 4 federal air marshals and 2 sheriff's deputies arrived in a rather fascist manner at his house to confiscate his federally issued firearm. The pilot recorded that event as well and provided all the video to News 10 in Sacramento. At the same time as the federal marshals took the pilot's gun, a deputy sheriff asked the pilot to surrender his state-issued permit to carry a concealed weapon. A follow-up letter from the Sheriff's Department said the CCW permit would be reevaluated following the outcome of the federal investigation. Well, I find this very interesting. It's more proof that the United States is heading toward the manner in which the old Soviet Union was run. The way in which people who shared information with the public, which made the government look, well, maybe as stupid as they probably are, found themselves basically harassed and sometimes driven from their jobs. You have to ask yourself, is this a good thing to have a Soviet Union-type fascist administration that operates such that when something is revealed so the public can see the transparency of things going on, in a light that's not the way the government wants them to see things, that they are harassed and driven out of their jobs? Do you think that's a good way for you to find out the truth, the absolute truth about the way things are in the federal government and at an airport, such as how the TSA is operating? Shouldn't you know what the TSA is doing and whether or not it's effective? The YouTube videos posted November 28th show what the pilot calls the irony of flight crews being forced to go through TSA screening while ground crew who service the aircraft are able to access secure areas simply by swiping a card. As you can see, the airport security is kind of a farce, he said in his narration of the video. It's only smoke and mirror, so you people believe that there's actually something going on here. Video shot in the cockpit shows a medieval-looking rescue axe available on the flight deck after the pilots have gone through the metal detectors. The pilot said, I would say it, a 2-foot crash axe looks a lot more formidable than a box cutter. A letter from the TSA dated December 6 informed this pilot that an administrative review into your deputation status as a federal flight deck officer has been initiated. According to this letter, the review was directly related to the discovery by TSA staff of the YouTube videos. The content and subject of these videos may have violated regulations concerning disclosure of sensitive security information, the letter said. The pilot's attorney, Don Werno of Santa Ana, said he believed the federal government sent 6 people to the house to send a message. And the message was, you've angered us by telling the truth and by showing America that there are major security problems, despite the fact that we've spent billions and billions of dollars allegedly to improve airline safety, Werno said. The pilot said he is not in trouble with his airline, but a supervisor asked him to remove public access to the YouTube videos. He does, however, face potential civil penalties from the TSA. He said he would likely go public when it becomes clear what the government plans to do with him. So there we have our little Soviet Union here, administered from the freak show in Washington, D.C., by Homeland Security, by FEMA, by the TSA, by all of these fascist operatives that are controlled at the top by some fairly neurotic characters such as Napolitano. That woman, I would hate to meet her at a bar. I would think that if I were in a position to have sex with Miss Napolitano, that I would probably not be able to do so, because I'm sure she's much more of a man than I am, from watching the way in which she handles herself. I don't see anything feminine about this person. What I see is a Hitlerian fascist dictator with a cheap little position in charge of TSA and Homeland Security, in which she's able to act as though she has some sort of importance in America, when in fact she doesn't, really. She's a person in way over head, in my opinion. A person who doesn't understand the vagaries of running a democracy, and how people shouldn't be threatened, how people shouldn't be treated as though they live in a dictatorship. But evidently Miss Napolitano thinks that's what people should think. She evidently suffers from what women sometimes suffer from, which is envy that they're not a male, and so they act more like a male than any other male in the government. I can give you other instances of this, such as in England we had Prime Minister Thatcher, who was more militaristic than most of the men around her. In America we had Janet Reno, who murdered children at Waco and lived to tell about it, telling people that, oh, it was a terrible mistake that these children died, and lying and saying that it wasn't the federal government that killed the children. It was the people inside the Waco church who set it afire themselves at the exact moment that a tank began to push fire into that wooden structure from one of the corners, which we could all see in the motion pictures. And also saying that no one ever shot into the building, when in fact there were videos of people shooting into the buildings from behind as the people tried to escape certain death inside of this inferno which the federal government caused. This particular scene was visited by millions of people, and a lot of you know exactly what I'm talking about because you've seen those videos, and if you haven't, go to YouTube and look at people that Waco fired upon from behind, and you'll see what was going on there. you'll see the murder that was taking place at the hands of the fascist United States government, a government that itself provoked whatever happened at Waco and did so on purpose. So now we have a pilot, 50 years old, served as a pilot for many, many years, and who showed some videos of what's wrong with the TSA, and they're acting as though what he showed would help the terrorists to blow up airplanes. The fact is that the war on terror is just as false as any other of the dramas that were started by the melodramatic United States government at the freak show in Washington. One of the worst dramas that they ever created was the Cold War, in which they spent billions and trillions of dollars building airplanes and inventing new weapons of mass destruction, so the United States would appear frightening to all other nations on the face of the earth, so that the presidents could act irresponsibly and act as dictators and as people for nations out in the world away from us to fear. For we were terrorists to the entire world during that period of time, from 1940s, 50s, 60s, all the way up to the present day. If you want to find the terrorist in the world, you simply look at Washington, D.C. You see the Capitol building there, the Pentagon, Langley with the CIA, and you will see that this is the center of world terrorism. I don't really appreciate the fact that I live in a growing dictatorship, and that I am a journalist in this situation, and that I have been attacked by the Homeland Security Agency, and by the Department of Justice, and they specifically wanted to deny me my civil rights to publish, to be a reporter, and to discuss what's going on in the United States, which is negative to all the people who live here and to all the people who live elsewhere in the world. This is one of the calling cards of dictatorships and of democracies that have gone fascist and critically fascist. These democracies, like Russia under the USSR and the United States and England under MI6, United States under the CIA, the TSA, and all these other fascist agencies and structures, is acting like a goon squad to the rest of the world, and even bigger goon squad to these citizens inside this country. Recently, with the WikiLeaks story, we've seen the federal government threatening journalists who even work for the New York Times and the Washington Post for having published what the government called secrets, which the government said had been stolen in cables that were intercepted. Well, had these things been stolen? Does a government have a right to keep things secret from people? Do they have a right to manipulate news so the people don't know exactly how dastardly they've been acting and speaking in private? And doesn't their private speech bespeak also what they're doing in public? Doesn't it show the Mad Hatter type of administration that these governments have been allowing to occur? Obviously, the superintendents, the directors, all the people that work in the CIA with the informants and so forth who publish these cables for private inspection only, obviously, they see what their counterparts are doing. They know how their counterparts are doing things that are basically questionable, that are threats not only to people outside the United States, but threats to people inside the United States. They know full well that they're the ones that started these wars, such as the Vietnam War, and that they knew that it was done with lies, and the same thing with both of the Iraq wars, and with the war against the Taliban in Afghanistan. They know their part in these wars and how they created fake, phony information to get them started. They know how much the United States was involved in the death of 3,000 people in New York on September the 11th, 2001. And I think we ought to know more and more about that. Well, this is the first time in the history of the world that skyscrapers collapsed due to fires. And not only did one collapse, but three of them collapsed, and one of them had not even been hit by an airplane. Because skyscrapers are made so they do not burn and collapse. They may burn, but they never collapse. So we have something here that is remarkable. Something that resembles systematic decimation of a building using dynamite. And we also find chemicals all over the streets of New York, which show that thermite, which is a part of the destructive business of bringing a building down, chemical that's used in the blowing up of buildings in a systematic way so they fall straight down and don't fall over to the side, that these chemicals were found all over the streets and roofs of the buildings, showing that thermite was used in the demolition of those buildings. But no one wants to speak about it. And what they say is if anybody questions 9/11, then their patriotism is questioned, as well as their sanity. As though it's all right for the United States government to say that it didn't seem really queer at all, if I could use that word, for the United States not to be ready for someone hijacking airplanes and flying them into buildings. That the United States is just stupid enough to allow this sort of thing to go on in front of its face, even though trillions have been spent on security. And yet they couldn't even get airplanes to New York City, which is their most vulnerable and important city in their entire nation. And they couldn't even protect it from a couple of Arabs that they claim took these airplanes with box cutters, just with simple razor blades. And then they didn't chase these planes where they were going, even though at the time they were going there, they were actually performing a war game to see what would happen if planes flew into and bombed the World Trade Center. Well, there's many things that happened on that day that are questionable. The first one being is, what are the possibilities that people would hijack planes and fly them into those buildings on a rare day when the United States government was planning an attack on those buildings to see what would happen? And one of the excuses is, well, we thought that this was a part of the war game that was going on, and then we found out that it was for real. Which is a perfect excuse for a government that wants to bring down buildings in order to start a world war. And in order to make people hate Arabs and so forth. Which is exactly what happened on that day. And why people would be called crazy to think that a country like the United States would lie about that and would bomb its own people, well, you'd simply need to look at what happened in the past, such as at Pearl Harbor, when the United States government knew full well that Japan was planning on taking out the ships in Pearl Harbor in the weeks before they did take them out and did nothing about it because they wanted the Japanese to do that. Why? So that the president could go before Congress and say, "This is a day that shall live in infamy." Because he basically wanted to start World War II for America. No one in America wanted it. They found World War I very distasteful and didn't want another thing to do with war. So they had to be coaxed and manipulated into supporting World War II. And man, were they coaxed. I mean, the people went down and signed up to join the Marines, the Air Force, the Navy, the Army, the Coast Guard. They were so incensed that the Japanese would attack American ships at Pearl Harbor. Not that anyone in Detroit would have any interest in protecting Pearl Harbor. Why would they? Why would they have an interest in it? Well, they probably didn't, except maybe a tiny one. I mean, what if Pearl Harbor had been owned by the Japanese and they had been stationed there and they never attacked anybody? Would it then be terrible for the Japanese to bomb Pearl Harbor when there were no American ships there? I mean, please, what are we talking about here? We happen to own Pearl Harbor, but the fact that we did and someone else attacked it doesn't mean that, although we were under attack on that day in that one specific little location, that the United States itself was violated in some large manner. It's not like they came into San Francisco and killed a million people. I believe that less people died at Pearl Harbor than died in the 9/11 attack. And it was the same situation, like I say, where the administration knew that something was going to happen, but they did nothing to prepare for it. In fact, if anything, on 9/11, it looks as though the United States may very well have known that those buildings were going to be taken down on that day, and so put up this black flag operation, pretending that they were trying to see what would happen if somebody bombed the buildings on that very day, thus making it more difficult for people on the ground to know what was going on, and giving the government an excuse for failing to stop this particular situation. But why would America want to stop the bombing of 9/11? Sure, 3,000 people died there, but 3,000 people died in Pearl Harbor. Look at the Gulf of Tonkin. The United States claimed that the Vietnamese had twice attacked a fleet of American ships in the Gulf of Tonkin, when in fact they didn't. And especially the second attack never even happened. Yet the United States used that to start a war, the Vietnamese War, which went on for 20 years and cost trillions of dollars and destroyed the American economy. Absolutely destroyed it. And everything that we did before and since was pretty much wiped out. We had some money left in 1956 when the stock market finally reached the position where it had been in 1933 for the first time. And then by the 1960s, they started the Vietnam War, and it went through the 60s and the 70s, and pretty soon the United States was just stone cold, butt broke. We didn't have any money for anything. Why? Because we'd wasted it on that stupid war in Vietnam, saying that if Vietnam went, all of Southeast Asia would go. Well, guess what happened? Vietnam went. We were kicked off the top of our own embassy building. They told us to get the hell out because they had defeated South Vietnam, North Vietnam did. So we left. Well, did Southeast Asia collapse? It seems to me the last time I looked, all of Southeast Asia remained. Nothing happened there. The only thing that happened there was in Cambodia, where the United States aided in the Pol Pot takeover in order to destabilize things in the area, that he went around murdering people. A typical United States ally, like Pinochet of Chile, who we installed, who went around killing people. Like the Shah of Iran, whom we installed, who went around killing people. Like the Taliban, whom we installed in Afghanistan, they went around killing people. Because this is what the United States does. We create and install political parties, movements, and individuals who murder other people. We are, for most people in this world, and for ourselves, the denizens of the world. The world resents us. They hate us. They do not trust us, because we have shown ourselves as a hateful, untrustworthy terrorist state that doesn't care who it attacks. As a matter of fact, several years ago, we attacked Russia, even. We had our neocons in Washington, including the Vice President Cheney, had decided that it was time for us to attack Russia. And so we went up to Odessa and Ossetia and up in Georgia, and we installed a kind of freakish government that we could work with, because these were dictator-type people who were very vicious and would do whatever we wanted them to do. And we got them to attack the Soviet Union. And when they did, we got our newspapers to claim that that the Soviet Union had attacked them. You know, the usual, the big lie when a war starts, where the government tells the newspapers or somehow passes information around saying, buddy, you better tell them. You better tell the American people in the world that Russia started this. are we're gonna look at you with a kind of jaundiced eye, whatever that means. It's amazing what the government could do to deceive people by telling a newspaper that we're gonna go after you if you don't do what we want. That threat's always there because governments are extremely powerful, and they did it to Jew Watch, just doing it to New York Times. Well, they do have more lawyers than Jew Watch would have, but when you consider that the Jews do a lot to run many of the politicians in Washington, and to make sure they do exactly what IPAC wants and what Israel wants, the fact that they accuse the New York Times of doing something that they want to go after them for doesn't really mean they're going to go after them. It just means they're going to threaten to do so, which itself is bad enough. There's enough tension in trying to run a professional news service such as the New York Times, the Washington Post, and a TV a news station, or Jew Watch News, or AmericanUSSR.com. News organs that are appreciated by other people around the world who only have these news venues to form their opinions about what's going on in the United States. It's difficult to run these organizations and to do the research necessary for accuracy in reporting, and to create archives and libraries of information so that people who don't want smoke blown up their rear end can go there and find things that the United States, Britain, Russia, whatever. These countries don't want people to read it again after it's been published once. But we allow people to research these things and to find out exactly, for instance, who went up the stairs of the Russian parliament during the overthrow of the democracy and the Red Revolution, and how Jews in New York paid for that, how they sent David Bronstein, alias Leon Trotsky, over to the Soviet Union from New York, where he'd been working as a movie actor for years, sent him over there with $20 million in his pocket, on a steamship in 1917 to work with Lenin to create the Soviet Union and to turn Russia into a vast killing field where 65 million people died, murdered by the Jewish Bolshevik Gestapo for 20 years of madness and torture. And these same people who live in New York, by the way, many of those that went with Trotsky, 350 of them went over there, 350 New Yorkers to run the Soviet Union, paid for it by these Jewish bankers, who are the Jewish Bolsheviks of New York and of the Soviet Union. Now, they have operatives like the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center to try to put out flames when people discover facts such as this. And you can go to Jew Watch right now and find out the names of all of these 350 New York Jews who went to the Soviet Union and responsible for the death of all of these millions of people. Now, I've told the Jews that I wouldn't tell on what they do if they don't do it. I told them, I said, you know, I only report what you've done. When you murder 65 million people in Russia, I only report it because you did that. If you hadn't done it, well, I wouldn't report it. So if you want me to stop reporting on you, then you have to stop doing these things. Like this TSA thing with this 50-year-old pilot who now has been harassed by the Jewish-run United States of America, and you can't say that it's not Jewish-run. I mean, look at the trillions of dollars that we've given to the bankers of New York. Do you think those are Christians up there? Come on, you can't be that naive, can you? Do you think it's a sleight of hand that we now have three Jews on the Supreme Court, which is 33 1/3% of the Supreme Court, when in fact the Jews are less than 3% of America, and now they have 10 times their demographic representation here on the Supreme Court, the most important judicial operative in America, and you think that's fair? There shouldn't be one Jewish person on the Supreme Court. because they don't have the numbers for it. There should only be 3% of Jews running the banks. Well, now it's, 90-95% running these banks. These are Rothschild banks in New York and elsewhere. Now, these people shouldn't be running these operatives. This is absurd. This is a threat to the national security of our nation. We have people who are committed to a warlike nation in Israel running our banks, dipping into the honeypot of the Federal Reserve System. And you and I are told that we should keep our mouths shut about this. Oh, sir, it's so uncomely for you to speak of this. Why, that's racist of you. And I say to that, no, that's not racist of me. It's racist to the Jewish people of this country to own over 90% of the media and of the news authorities here, like the New York Times, the Washington Post, hundreds of newspapers, news studios, as well as the movie studios. These are owned by Jewish people. This is a threat to the national security. My identifying it is not a threat to the national security. I mean, I've blown the whistle on it. How could that be a threat to the national security? The national security has been threatened because a minority of Jewish Bolsheviks who ran the Soviet Union and who gave our atomic secrets away in the 1950s, if you've forgotten, just, sent them over to Russia so Russia could build H-bombs and A-bombs. Here's how you do it, sir, my friend, my Jewish friend. These are the people that have done these things, who have been total traitors to the United States. But you're supposed to forget that. It's racist of you to remember this. But you have allowed these people to continue to own your media, to propagandize you, which is the first method of mind control that is useful to taking over your country and running it like a fascist state, which it now is. We are the Soviet Union now here in America. Make no mistake of it. And it was these same Judeo-Bolsheviks in New York who designed the plan to infiltrate America with millions and millions of foreigners who are unlike us, so that we will be balkanized and easier to destroy from within. The same as they wanted to do in the Soviet Union. Because these people are globalists, and the Soviet Union was a globalist empire. They felt that anything that was nationalist was a threat to communism. They wanted the entire world to be mixed together so that there wasn't a single race left, so that everybody would be mixed up. And the communists wanted this because they felt that everybody was equal. And they even applied this to the animals in their agriculture. Lyshenko, who was one of their propagandists and one of their great philosophical thinkers, Lyshenko decided that since it was communism, that even the cows should be bred together, as well as the horses and the chickens and every other animal, that they're all the same. Genetically, there was no difference between these animals. So they took the cattle in Russia and they bred them together. They had cattle that had been bred for all sorts of meat production, so that they produced more and more meat. And they took the bad cows and they bred them with the good bulls, and the bad bulls and bred them with the good cows, until they had decimated the magnificent herds of animals they had, and suddenly their milk production dropped by significant percentiles, as did the meat production, as did the very survival of the herd, because they wasted 200 years of agriculture and genetic grouping of these cattle, so that they had a perfect agriculture, and they destroyed it in 5 years. Suddenly the people in Russia was starving. No one could get a steak. No one could buy milk because the cattle were destroyed through this communist innovation, this globalist thinking that every cow and every bull was the same. So don't worry if they're from a different herd of cattle. Take the bad ones, breed them with the good ones. It'll all come out the same. And the result was starvation and famine. And that's what's the result in our educational system in America. We've imported all of these people into our schools that didn't used to be there. And then we wonder why the schools are failing. Are you out of your mind, America? Are you this stupid that you are talked into things by the Judeo-Bolsheviks in New York and through their newspapers and through their TV studios and their movie studios into things that are ruining your nation so that in 20, 30, 40 years, people like yourself won't even be here anymore? Because you are being replaced by these invaders that your country's bringing in here at the behest of these communists in New York who call themselves bankers now. And by the way, the communists were always bankers. Why do you think Jacob Schiff of the Guarantee National Bank gave Trotsky the $20 million to go to Russia, unseat the Tsar, and start the Soviet Union? Because, my friends, it was the bankers, the Rothschild banks especially, who paid Marx to write Das Kapital and who came up with the fake Soviet Union, which was all run by banks, and they got their money from the banks in New York and in Oslo to pay for everything that they did. The Soviet Union was able to help to defeat Germany in World War II because the United States was giving tons of money to the Soviet Union for their factories, for the plants in which they built their little tanks to defeat the Nazi regime. They couldn't have done it without American money. They couldn't have done it without the Judeo-Bolsheviks in New York. That's how they did it. They used United States money. And now our little Judeo-Bolshevik traitors in New York have spent trillions of our dollars after they gambled all that money away and sold products to people all over the world who used to be our friends, who immediately became our enemies because we've made them into paupers. They sold them these phony goods, which turned out to be worthless after the banks had lied about them and said these were AAA bonds and products. It turned out that they were D-rated products, that they were bound to fail, and that Goldman Sachs and these other companies were voting with their dollars against these products because they knew they were going to fail, and they made money when they came down even while they were selling them to their so-called friends all over the world, knowing full well they were bringing a depression down upon everybody's heads. But if you want to trust these newspapers run by these Judeo-Bolsheviks, and if you want to call Jewwatch News, which tells the truth, and AmericanUSSR.com, which tells the truth, that the owner of this is some sort of a fraudulent freak, when in fact everything printed by the New York Times and the Washington Post is carefully worded to make sure that you are hoodwinked, that you are brought down and your nation is brought down, because these people want a new world order. They are the new world order. The bankers are the new world order. And all over the world, they run the airlines, they run petroleum, they run gold, they run paper fake phony money for each country, they run the banks, they run the International Monetary Fund, and through all these operatives are able to buy every industry in the world and every newspaper, every radio station, so that no matter if you're listening to radio in America or in South America, wherever you're listening, it's owned by these same people who are working to bring all of the world power into their fist. And what does fascism come from? It comes from the word fasci, or fist. Bring everything that you find in the world that brings power into one fist and hold it in your fist. The newspapers, the corporations, the banks, the governments, the military, the radio stations. These people have basically purchased the singers of our age, and they own them. This is the first time in the history of the world that singers are owned by promoters. This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. And now they've established their copyrights to the point where if you download one of their little trite songs, you can be fined some tremendous amount of money. But you don't care, do you? You have no self-respect. You haven't had any self-respect for years. You've allowed these Judeo-Bolsheviks to create huge monopolies in your news so that you have no idea even what's really going on, only what they have told you. And since they're trying to hide things from you, what you've gotten from them is very, very precious little, except for the ruination of your country. Endless wars based on lies, which these people have not really done much to inform you of, although they have somewhat told you these things. They haven't harped on it. They've told you and then hidden it so they could say, well, we did tell this to you, but you guys forgot about it. And that's how they're able to pretend that they're on the up and up, which in fact is untrue, because the name of the game is to inform you just enough and then let you forget about it. But there are places like Jewwatch News, which is at jewwatch.com, and AmericanUSSR.com, where you can still find these pieces of information. You can also find the hundreds of medical experiments, much like Dr. Mengele's, which is done by the American Nazi government here, the American USSR, which has gleefully injected little 14-year-old girls with plutonium in their arms at mental hospitals. How's that for a nice, whistle-sweet America? Isn't it just wonderful? I have told you for many, many years that the war on terror is a fake war on terror. And now we find today an article in the New York Times, that venerable Judeo-Bolshevik publication that's gone on for 100 years, that U.S. has approved U.S. approved businesses with blacklisted nations, which is illegal. The United States is not supposed to approve business with blacklisted nations. So let's see what we have here and see what we can find out about this to inform ourselves as to just how upside down everything in America has become. The story says that despite sanctions and trade embargoes, over the past decade, the United States government has allowed American companies to do billions of dollars in business with Iran and other countries blacklisted as state sponsors of terrorism. This is according to an examination by the New York Times. Well, I could add another nation that is blacklisted, but where we have plenty of trade, and that would be Red China. Red China has been listed for years as our enemy, and now they're our biggest friend. We do more trade with Red China than we do with Iran. Well, this is our major trading partner now, far more so than England even. At the behest of a host of companies from Kraft Food and Pepsi to some of the nation's largest banks. Ah, banks. You know, code word for Judeo-Bolsheviks. A little-known office of the Treasury Department has granted nearly 10,000 licenses for deals involving countries that have been cast into economic purgatory beyond the reach of American business and for political reasons. Most of the licenses were approved under a decade-old law mandating that agriculture and medical humanitarian aid be exempted from sanctions. But the law, pushed by the farm lobby and other industry groups, was written so broadly that allowable humanitarian aid has included things like cigarettes. Well, that doesn't sound too humanitarian or medical. Wrigley's gum. Is that a prescription? I don't think I needed a prescription for Wrigley's gum the last time I went to the drugstore or to the supermarket. Louisiana hot sauce. Well, now, that could be a medical substance for people that have stomach problems, where they might have some sort of a bug in their stomach, and this hot pepper sauce with all the materials in it could kill those particular bugs. Weight loss remedies. Bodybuilding supplements and sports rehabilitation equipment sold to the institute that trains Iran's Olympic athletes. Well, personally, I don't see much wrong with selling weightlifting equipment to Iran's Olympic athletes. Isn't it better for them to be lifting weights and using that as an outlet rather than trying to build atomic bombs, which is what they say they're trying to do, but we don't really know for sure. And of course you have to ask yourself, who's the United States to tell Iran they can't make an atomic bomb? We have 20,000 atomic bombs, and we have 1,500 delivery vehicles where we can deliver them anywhere in the world. Who are we to tell any nation they can't have an atomic bomb when we have so many of them? Hundreds of other licenses were approved by the United States government because they passed a litmus test. They were deemed to serve American foreign policy goals, and many clearly do, among them deals to provide famine relief in North Korea, or to improve internet connections and nurture democracy in Iran. But the examination also found cases in which the foreign policy benefits were considerably less clear. Let's look at this further. In one instance, an American company was permitted to bid on a pipeline job that was reported to have helped Iran sell natural gas to Europe, even though the United States opposes such projects. Several other American businesses were permitted to deal with foreign companies believed to be involved in terrorism or weapons proliferation. Again, why would the United States be against weapons proliferation? We're the biggest supplier of arms to all these nations that produce what we call terror. I mean, we sell lots of stuff to companies that where the weapons get to Hamas and Hezbollah and to Iran, Iraq, etc. In one such case involving equipment bought by a medical waste disposal plant in Hawaii, the government was preparing to deny the license until an influential politician intervened. In an interview, the Obama administration's point man on sanctions, Stuart A. Levy, I bet he's Jewish, don't you think, with a name like Levy? The point man for Obama, Stuart A. Levy, said that focusing on the exceptions misses the forest for the trees. Indeed, the exceptions represent only a small counterweight to the overall force of America's trade sanctions, which are among the toughest in the world. Now, these trade sanctions are particularly focused on Iran, where, on top of a broad embargo that prohibits most trade, the United States and its allies this year adopted a new round of sanctions that have effectively shut Iran off from much of the international financial system. Well, if I were Iran, I think I'd be very happy to be shut off from the international financial system, which is plummeting, which is in dire trouble. And if my money in Iran was attached to this international financial system, then I'd be in trouble too. I mean, who would want to be a part of this Judeo-Bolshevik financial system, which has destroyed the economies worldwide of everyone who's dealt with them? No one can doubt that we are serious about this, Mr. Levy said. But as the administration tries to press Iran even harder to abandon its nuclear program, and this is the America with at least 20,000 nuclear weapons in its archives and its arsenal, officials this week announced several new sanctions measures against Iran. Some diplomats and foreign affairs experts worry that by allowing the sale of even small-ticket items with no military application, the United States muddies its moral and diplomatic authority. Well, what moral and diplomatic authority can a terrorist state like the United States have worldwide? We've attacked the Soviet Union, we've attacked Iran verbally, and we want to have war with them, according to our leaders. We've attacked Iraq, which was a democracy, and killed its leader. We've attacked Afghanistan. We created the Taliban to cause trouble. We created Osama bin Laden to cause trouble. We paid him. We've created all of these so-called denizens whom we say that we hate. We created Iran as it is today. They used to have a king. We had him overthrown for a democracy, which we overthrew to have a dictatorship. And there isn't a dictatorship that we've put in power that we didn't like, including Pinochet. It's not a bad thing to grant exceptions if those exceptions represent a conscious policy decision to give countries an incentive, said Stuart Eisenstadt, who oversaw a sanctions policy for Clinton during his administration when the humanitarian aid law was passed. But when you create loopholes like this, you can drive a Mack truck through. Well, then you are giving countries something for nothing, and they just laugh in their teeth. I think there have been abuses. Well, this is really interesting. I mean, can you imagine giving sanctions against countries who are trying to have a nuclear industry the same as the United States has? I mean, if the United States were to be honest and moral and ethical about atomic weapons, then we would burn ours. We would get rid of them. We would take them all apart and get rid of them. But we're not about to do that because we want to use them to destroy the rest of the world, to make the rest of the world afraid of us. And to continue doing that, we want to make sure that the rest of the world can't have nuclear weapons so that we can continue to screw them and to act like dictators over them and to force them to do things that are not in their national interest because we are a bunch of grubby, thuggish mafia dictators with our fingers on the throats of the nations around the world who would love nothing more than to escape from our colonial imperial grasp. What's more, in countries like Iran, where elements of the government have assumed control over large portions of the economy, it is increasingly difficult to separate exceptions that help the people from those operations that enrich the state. Indeed, records show that the United States has approved the sale of luxury food items to chain stores owned by blacklisted banks, despite requirements that potential purchasers be scrutinized for just such connections. So now you can't even sell caviar to a bank in Iran? Oh my, oh my, what can we say? Enforcement of America's sanctions rests with Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control, which can make exceptions with guidance from the State Department. Now, why in the world would you have, in a democracy, a Treasury Office of Foreign Assets Control? Are you starting to get the picture about how Sovietized the American government is, how Nazi-like it has become, and how these Bolsheviks in New York are running everything? And most of these things are centered on Iran, with the sole exception of North Korea, which is so close to South Korea that that's another situation that we're still interested in. But mostly, our focus is on the Middle East because the terror nation of Israel, which has terrorized that part of the world now for over 100 years, even for the 50 years before they became a nation, they were murdering British troops over there, Egyptian troops, Turkish troops. I mean, these were not good people. They were terrorists. They were bombing hotels. They were killing soldiers and sending pictures of them hanging from trees to their parents in England. Nice little Israel. Israel that started, whose people started the Soviet Union and ran it like a killing field for 20 years. Our favorite ally. Do you get the idea that your country's out of control and it's no good and that it's no good for you? And what are you going to do about it? Are you ever going to do anything about it? Are you ever going to stand up and say, I'm a citizen in this country and I'm not going to allow you to replace me with people that don't look or think like me? People from different religions and nations, because the communists who run the banks in New York and run our country want to put us out of business and to exterminate us basically in our own country of America because they can have their way with us more easily that way. When are you going to stand up and protect yourself and tell this mafia organization in New York and Washington that cooperate with each other in starting wars that we can never win, in wasting our money, and who make all the rest of the world hate us because of the terror that we unleash against them on a daily basis. When are you going to stand up and tell these thugs that they're a bunch of killers and you're not going to support them any longer? Now, as prestigious as the neo-Bolshevik United States operative known as the New York Times is, the Treasury Office resisted disclosing information about the licenses to the New York Times. But after the New York Times filed a federal Freedom of Information lawsuit, the government reluctantly agreed to turn over a list of companies granted exceptions. And in a little more than 100 cases, underlying files explaining the nature and details of the deals. The process took 3 years, and the government heavily redacted many documents saying they contained trade secrets and personal information. Still, according to the New York Times, that must have spent millions on this, the files offered a snapshot, albeit a piecemeal snapshot, of a system that at times appears out of sync with its own licensing policies and America's goals abroad. In some cases, licensing rules fail to keep a pace with changing diplomatic circumstances. For instance, American companies were able to import cheap blouses and raw material for steel from North Korea because restrictions loosened when that government promised to renounce its nuclear weapons program and were not recalibrated after the agreement fell apart. Mr. Levy, a Treasury Undersecretary who held the same job in the Bush administration, pointed out that the United States did far less business with Iran than did China or Europe. In the first quarter of this year, 0.02% of American exports went to Iran, which is almost nothing. And while it isn't a fair policy to ask whether Congress's definition of humanitarian aid is overly broad, Mr. Levy said, the exception has helped the United States argue that it opposes Iran's government and not its people. So there you have it. We oppose the Iranian government, but not its people. It seemed to me that its people spoke when they got rid of the Shah of Iran, who had been torturing them. And when it got rid of the United States, it had 15 to 20 Air Force bases that kept Iran in a lockdown so that anything Iran wanted to do, it was afraid of the United States and had to almost ask our permission. That we had colonized that nation for many, many years and were running the show there. We were the ones who put the Shah in there, and he was the yes man for us, so that whatever we wanted, the Shah would put it into play for us. And, of course, this wasn't good for Iran. We destroyed that country. I mean, you know, we're doing this to make it appear that that we're only against the government of Iran, and we're not against the people. Well, the heck, we aren't against the people. America was the enemy of the Iranian people for decades. For decades, and we're the enemy of every people in the Middle East. And everybody in the Middle East knows it. And everybody in Europe knows it. Everyone in China knows it. Everybody in Russia knows it. They know the skullduggery of the United States of America. And I know the skullduggery because they've come after me. They came right down to my little newspaper, Jew Watch News, tried to shut it down, threatening me with years of imprisonment for wire fraud, for which there was absolutely no evidence whatsoever. They claimed that I had done something fraudulent, and when they investigated, they found I hadn't made a dime. I hadn't collected any money, hadn't spent any money. I didn't even have an organization to do that. Because when the government objected to me doing anything, because the Jews immediately reported it to them. They thought, oh, we've got him now. We can shut down his Jew Watch because he's a fraud. Well, they found out that I hadn't done anything. And they also found out by snooping on me that I was probably the most boring person in America because I don't really know any radicals personally. Except, as you know, by reading the newspaper. Because I'm a loner, I stay to myself.